Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Royals.
And gone!
Trust the same experts who make the right call for the Royals and go to kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. That was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll copter this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
We have a Tuesday Almost Entirely Sports again, which means we have a Tuesday segment with Seth Kaiser of both The Athletic and The Chief in the North newsletter segment. And also, you can, of course, follow him on Twitter at RealMN Chiefs Fan. Check out the Times Ours podcast with him and Nate Taylor and someone else. And also, just one more time for the live listening audience, if you want election coverage, it's over on 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. We've got some election coverage over there. We're doing none of that right here, right now. Because we're focused, baby. We're focused. Listen, Seth, I know that we've said this to each other many times. Whenever it's Carolina Panthers week, you got to hone in. You got to block everything else out and start preparing for those Panthers.
You know, it's so weird. I always forget about this, that a few times a year, you know, my kid actually asked me, well, you know, how often do they play NFC teams? And I was like, well, fairly often. Then I started to actually think about it.
Yep.
I was like, you know, they really don't play NFC teams all that much. You know, you end up playing one division, and you're done. And it's so little. There's sometimes you get opponents that you know so little about.
Yep.
Like the Carolina Panthers. I don't know anything about the Panthers. I know that Teddy Bridgewater's having a good season.
Christian McCaffrey's probably back for this game. There you go. You did it.
Yeah, well, and I know that probably moves the needle completely in how you will predict the game.
Absolutely.
You know what? I don't know why I'm inviting the running backs argument. I don't know why I'm doing that.
I just think the most important thing for me at this point, I think what you just sort of touched on there is important to me. I think once people realize that you are the agitator now at this point in the conversation, I think they're going to start turning against you. Because I think...
I think that's going to start happening. But what I mean was, I don't know why you would text me beforehand and ask me to bring up running backs. I don't know. I got nothing. One thing with the Panthers.
Yes.
I think people are maybe Chiefs fans because they don't know anything about the Panthers. Let me just say, you shouldn't approach this game with the same mindset that you approached the Jets game.
Totally fair.
The Jets are a brutally bad football team. That they're unusually bad. Usually the worst team in the NFL isn't quite as bad as the Jets are this year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Panthers, they're okay.
Yeah.
They're a decent team. They've got a really well-run offense. Joe Brady's doing some really interesting things. Teddy Bridgewater's throwing the ball really well. They present a much stiffer challenge than the Jets. They're the type of team that if the Chiefs bring, like, their C game, they could lose.
Yeah.
They are also a team that if the Chiefs bring their, you know, B to B-plus game, they're very likely to win.
And they could bring their C game and win in a kind of a gross one where neither team is playing their best game. Like, yeah, that's all totally fair.
Yeah.
I do want to talk to you about the Jets a little bit. We talked about it some, obviously, on Times Ours.
Right.
But I enjoyed some of the things that you were doing over the course of the game, which was realizing that, oh, man, no one was exaggerating about this football team.
That was a lot. I referenced Charles McDonald, who covers the Jets, a few times leading up to this game because he does a great job of it. He's got a good sense of humor about the whole thing. He actually was out of the way. I tweeted after the game. I don't remember what it was. And he tweeted me, I told you they were this bad.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I did not believe you. I really, because I hadn't reviewed a ton of their tape. There just wasn't time. It was hard to believe how bad they were, because really, in a game where the Chiefs won 35-9, I think it was. Yeah. They, or was it 35-12? See, I can't
it
even remember.
Nine. No, it was 9. It was 9, yeah. I was hung up on 35, honestly. So, yeah, it was definitely to 9.
So they won the game 35-9. This is a game where Tyrann Mathieu dropped a couple of picks, but not dropped. There was one he could have had, and then one that was more of a drop, mm-hmm. at least, you know, based on his reactions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tyrann Mathieu thinks he should have intercepted every pass
that's
be
ever been thrown that's landed anywhere on the field.
Yeah.
If it landed out of bounds, maybe he couldn't have. Maybe.
Right. And so they had a play, you know, they had a drive end because of a failed 4th-and-1. And we could talk about delayed handoffs off the middle on 4th-and-1. Like, that's, you know, if you're going to run the ball, just, like, run the ball, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't, like, delay it and see what happens. Anyway, yeah. That's a whole matter here or there. But they lost one drive because of that. They had a couple other drives where, you know, you've got, like, a drop here, there, you know, just little things. They really didn't play their A game. And they still just blew them out of the water, despite sitting Patrick Mahomes for the last couple of tries. I mean, this could have been much worse.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of got that feeling throughout the game every time they did something. It's just like, really, the only thing that can happen for the Jets is the Chiefs make a mistake.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason they didn't score on every drive, yeah. is they would make some sort of mistake. It was just unbelievable domination. You know, Darnold was able to move the ball a little bit early, and then that just ended. So, yeah, I'm not sure the last time I saw one team that was so clearly so much better than another team in an NFL game.
And for me, like, I mean, we've seen versions of that in, like, phases and stuff throughout this entire year where the Chiefs have been the better team, not by that margin, of course. They've been the better team, or they've won in ways that, like, I think objectively are less fun. I just had fun with that game on Sunday, watching even when they actually left a couple points on the board for a couple reasons you laid out, and then some other stuff. Like, the Chiefs did not absolutely go 100% full fire breathing dragon, but Patrick Mahomes threw for 5 touchdowns and threw for 400 yards and had a couple deep shots, and Tyreek Hill went into the stands once and then got carried off by Patrick Mahomes another time, and they did have a bowling touchdown to Travis Kelce. Like, having all of that even against a team as bad as the Jets, I didn't need it. I wasn't doubting anything the Chiefs offense was doing, but it just felt good. It was just, I don't need dessert. I believe that things are still delicious, but I'd love some dessert right now. The Chiefs gave us offensive dessert, it felt like.
They did. You know, they could have kind of phoned it in a little bit in terms of the run-pass ratio.
Yep.
But to be fair, you know, the Jets, it looks like they tried to get the run game going a little bit early, and the Jets were defending the run pretty well. Mm-hmm. And they weren't leaving empty boxes, and their linebackers weren't backing up. And so the Chiefs said, well, okay, you know, if you want to stop the run, that's fine, but that means something terrible is going to happen, and
right.
That's what happened. They really, like you said, they didn't necessarily like throttle down, but they didn't throttle back either.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun to watch. I think a lot of people have been looking for that kind of fire-breathing dragon offense all year, where they're just moving the ball at will, and at times people haven't felt like it. It's still worth reminding people that prior to the Jets game, the Chiefs were the number one rated offense in the NFL by Football Outsiders offensive mm-hmm. efficiency, which is the best team stat I can find.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as though this offense has been quite good already against some good defenses, but it was fun to see them have just this completely overmatched opponent that on top of it came in with a pretty bad game plan and just take advantage. That was fun.
Yeah. I'm not sure the Jets have good coaches. I'm still trying to piece all that together, but I'm starting to worry about the Jets' sort of leadership and also talent. This is not the most important thing we could be talking about, but are you a little sad that the Chiefs didn't try to trade for Quinnen Williams? Or at least didn't successfully trade? Maybe they tried. I don't know.
Maybe they tried. I mean, obviously, the only thing the Chiefs did, they traded Washington and a 7th, I think, for a 6th.
Yeah.
which, hey, you know, fine, good for you. You know, Brett Veach's drafting history the last couple of years, that sixth-round pick can help.
And they had five active running backs and all. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, whether they use that sixth-round pick, where I get excited about sixth-round picks, because, you know, generally speaking, you're talking about depth and stuff there, but you can also use that in ammunition in a trade. You know, if you want to move up in the fourth round or the third round, you know, that can actually, you can make some noise with a sixth-round pick. And so I kind of like that. I do wish they'd been a little more aggressive. It's frustrating to me that the Titans acquired an excellent slot cornerback for, like, a bag of rice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Desmond King. Like, that's frustrating. Now, obviously, we don't know everything behind the scenes. Could be the Chiefs inquired and the Chargers politely told them, you know, you're in our division. No.
Right.
Although I'm not sure if that's, like, the one thing keeping the Chargers from competing with the Chiefs this year for
fair.
A playoff spot.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Totally fair.
But it was a little frustrating because I would have loved to see them get more quarterback help, even though, as you and I talked about last week, the quarterbacks have played pretty well.
Yeah, the whole pass defense has been really, really good. And also, you know how many cornerbacks is enough? One more than you currently have, all the time. Like, that's just
exactly. And maybe the Chiefs, you know, I've heard whispers here and there about when Legarius Sneed might be back.
Mm-hmm.
Might be fairly soon. You know, Nate would know better than either you or me.
Right.
Well,
I would say that's not true just because both of us have Nate's phone number. We could just ask him.
Yeah, that's true. He's cool like that.
So we all know the same amount.
I mean, he got hurt in week three. You know, we just got done with week eight. So now we're coming up on the 6 weeks. And so, you know, it could be that they can start cycling him back pretty soon. That would be great. But I haven't heard anything about how he's doing. To be fair, I hadn't heard anything about how Mike Dana was doing until they were like, hey, Mike Dana's back this week.
Right.
So that's just how the Chiefs operate. So it could be they think Sneed will be back in a few weeks. And like you said, everyone's playing well, including their depth guys. And so if they're comfortable with Ward and Breland and Fenton, all of whom are playing well,
mm-hmm.
You know, Ward isn't playing as well as he was last year, but he's still playing decently.
Mm-hmm.
Breland's playing well. Fenton's playing well. And Hamilton in spots has done what they've asked him to do. So maybe their thought is, well, Legarius is coming back. Why blow anything? I agree with you. Having one more talented guy, it could be, and usually this happens a lot, and people need to understand this. The fact that Desmond King, a very, very good slot cornerback,
yeah.
was traded for such low compensation tells me two things. One, the Chargers weren't willing to wait to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you think about it, they could have just waited for free, you know, for him to walk in free agency and gotten a comp pick.
Yeah,
right?
That's true, yeah.
And that comp pick, in theory, would be better than what they get. Like, it was like a fifth or a sixth rounder.
It was a sixth. A 2021 sixth.
In theory, because he is a very good slot corner, what he should get in free agency... you'd think would be worth more to the team than that,
yeah.
unless they need to get him out of the building now. And that's what that trade felt like. Like, we need to get him out of here now. And the fact that other teams around the league weren't that interested, including, you know, teams that are competing for Super Bowls, because it's not just the Chiefs. Every team could use a good corner.
Yep.
That tells me there's something behind the scenes there where they just said, nope, not this time. They're willing to take on some locker room stuff, but not all of it. So that could have been it. I wish they'd have traded for Quinnen Williams to answer your question from approximately 10 minutes ago. Yeah, I just realized midway through, like, man, this was meandering, this answer.
It's been a really long time since we've had this segment. We're both just going to talk for long stretches of time. It's fine.
And you know what? I like that. I like that. I've missed this. This is nice.
It's nice. We're just taking a walk through a meadow, and occasionally there are Chiefs things in the meadow.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be cool and disconcerting at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. If we were taking a nice walk in a park and then Quinnen Williams just, like, fell out of a tree in front of us, that would be terrifying.
It would be. And I think Chiefs fans now got to see firsthand, you know, when you don't, you know, the Jets are bad, so you kind of hear, oh, you know, Williams is kind of a bust. Chiefs fans got to see firsthand. He's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
And he is trapped in football, not even football purgatory. I mean, it's football hell.
Yeah, I think it's just football hell. I think you're right. Who is football purgatory? Is that just, I mean, I think the Chargers are football purgatory because they're always like they just find new ways to lose. Maybe Atlanta, maybe the two of them sort of share football purgatory.
They're always chargering. I believe those two teams play this year, and it's going to be exciting to see how one of those teams finds a way to outlose.
They got a tie
to the other team.
It's got to be a tie. I don't know. You got to be able to get good odds on that being a tie, right? I feel.
Yeah, it's such amazing things. But with Quinn Williams, I would have loved to see it just because the pass rush to me outside of Chris Jones has been a little bit lackluster. When I go back and review the tape, Frank Clark's looking better on tape than he does in real time. But he's also not popping on film the way he did down the stretch last year.
Yeah.
Now, again, I haven't charted his snaps, so we'll see. But there were too many snaps, in my opinion, where even Sam Darnold on a bad Jets team looked fairly comfortable. You know, at least he had time, right, to hit the back of his drop and survey for a moment or two.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not comfortable with that. That we're not too far removed from Derek Carr having all day to stare at the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have loved for them to try to bolster the pass rush, but we'll see. Maybe there's just a sign they're going to give Tershawn Wharton more snaps, as well they should. So,
I think Colin Saunders was essentially a healthy scratch behind Tershawn Wharton last week.
You know, I didn't notice him on the field at all.
He was inactive. Saunders was legitimately inactive, and I think is just that he was healthy. I don't think it was injury related because he was out there warming up and stuff, and they had him as a healthy scratch, and Tershawn Wharton got snaps.
And yeah, and Wharton continues to get snaps, and I mean he's playing legitimately well, like not superstar well, but very very well for a rookie. And that's just been awesome to see. You don't see this type of thing happen a lot with undrafted guys. And I'm excited to see what his future holds. He's a very untraditionally built defensive tackle in that he's kind of built more like an oversized linebacker.
Hmm.
In that he did used to weigh 255 pounds, and now he weighs at least 295.
Seth, if that was impressive, then I'd be signing an NFL contract. That's just been me since all of the lockdown started.
That's true. Well, that's everyone. That's me since my wife started having babies. It's the men who gain the weight. It's the dangest thing. He's doing really well. He still has things to work on. He doesn't really have a primary or secondary pass rush move right now, but he's got unusual strength. He's got contact bounce, and he's a really good athlete for his size. And so there's a lot to be excited about with him. And really, I mean, seriously, shout out to Brett Veach, an undrafted rookie, and then a late-round rookie in Mike Gaina, who, despite some athleticism issues that got kind of put on display a few times against Sam Darnold, has played really well for a rookie, too. And it's hard to find contributors, especially up front, late in the draft. And so that's just so impressive.
Yeah. So I want to just spend like a slight extra second on the pass rush because, I mean, you touched on it. We talked about this a little bit on Time Zards also. But I just think it's really interesting that we are kind of at a point where, like you said, it's not bad. And I'm not just doing this from the Raiders game or whatever. But generally speaking, and I'm about to do a lot of things, and I know you know this. I want to explain this to the listener also. I'm gonna use two sort of metrics that are not necessarily the smartest ones, but in terms of at least statistical production and kind of judging by the amount that was invested in both Frank Clark and Chris Jones, and really in that defensive line. I mean, Alex Okafor wasn't cheap. Obviously, he's had a ton of bad injury luck. But then you even bring in numbers with Mike Dana and Taco Charlton and Derek Nnadi and Colin Saunders and Tershawn Wharton. It hasn't been, at the very least, it has not been a dominant pass rush this year, which I think we would have bet on knowing that Chris Jones and Frank Clark were going to spend, 90% of the snaps on the field together.
Absolutely.
90 might be high, just for the record, but being on the field together as starters.
And the first few weeks of the season, it looked like it was going to be that way.
Yeah.
Honestly, we're not that far removed from the Ravens game where Jones and Clark just wreaked havoc that game. And I would say, and maybe people would say I'm something of a Chris Jones homer, I would leave Jones out of that equation to an extent. In that he's been excellent.
Yeah, he's popped a couple times, even on non-sacks, but batted passes and all of that. Yeah, that's fair.
Right. I would say, though, the pass rush around him has been a little bit lackluster, and Clark quietly has been pretty quiet in terms of sacks and hits. Now, you know, I again, I haven't charted these snaps. So I haven't seen how many, you know, wins he's had. By ESPN's win rate, it's been pretty low. And so I don't know. You know, maybe he's struggling with an injury again. Maybe he's just kind of streaky. But you are right in, given the investment in those two, you don't pay two defensive linemen top-tier money for one of them to be excellent and the other one to be decent, right? Now, and Clark provides a lot of other stuff. I mean, you know, like Tyrann Mathieu's stuff of that jet sweep, it got missed by a lot of people, but, you know, Frank Clark was the one who gestured to him what was coming. And that's where you see Mathieu move. I mean, so those veteran things, they help. But it is just at least worth, you know, you put a pin on it. Keep an eye on it. See what happens against a much better offense than the Jets in the Panthers, because the Panthers are the best offense the Chiefs have faced since the Raiders, which is a weird statement to say, but the Raiders had a pretty good offense this year.
That's a bizarre thing to say just on like eight different levels, but you're not wrong.
Yeah, they've been pretty good. You know, when I looked at, like, you know, the third down rates of quarterbacks and how they've been doing, Derek Carr's actually been pretty good on third down this year. We'll see if it holds up. Yeah. Over the, you know, Derek Carr's always been a decent quarterback when he's got a good line. Like his, he just because of how he reacts to pressure, his ceiling gets raised more than a lot of quarterbacks with a good line.
Yeah.
But anyway, with the Panthers, they've got a very good offensive design. Teddy Bridgewater's playing pretty good football. And so it'll be an opportunity to see whether or not, you know, the pressure issue is something that might cost them against a better offense. Now, the pass defense has been great this season. So at a certain point, we're nitpicking. Because, I mean, it's the same pass rush that made Lamar Jackson look downright mediocre, really took down, you know, Deshaun Watson. They played well overall against good quarterbacks.
Well, also one thing real quick to that point, though, both Watson's offense and Jackson specifically have looked less good than I thought they would have whenever they were playing the Chiefs from that point since then. I'm not sure that that's
absolutely
totally explaining it, but, I mean, at least kind of interesting.
It is. You know, with the Ravens, I mean, you know, the first couple of weeks they had dominated teams so thoroughly, but they weren't good teams. And that was one reason why the Chiefs, by and large, were not favored going into that game.
That's crazy.
If they were to play again, I think the Chiefs would be not super heavily favored, but fairly heavily favored, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so the pass defense has been good. I mean, the Bills have a decent passing offense, and they did well against them. You know, elements kind of helped. They made bad quarterbacks look terrible. And so overall, the pass defense has been excellent, but it is just, you know, when we're at that point with the Chiefs. They really are this good.
Yes.
And I think that's something you and I talked about heading into the season. You know, are they really as good as we think? And right now, I would say they are a better team than they were last year at this point, and maybe at any other point when they played last year. Now I understand, you know, they obviously made and won the Super Bowl.
Right.
But that, I think right now, I think if this Chiefs team plays last year's Chiefs team on a neutral field, I don't know how else it could be anything but a neutral field.
Well, I would watch that. Is that the end of the sentence? I would like that very much.
I would definitely watch that, but I think this year's Chiefs team would win the majority of the time. And so at a certain point, you start nitpicking things like the pass rush being decent, but not great.
Yep.
And that's where we're at right now.
And I think that at least for a while longer, we will be justified in kind of couching that again just for the listener, like, of, hey, we're nitpicking because that's where they're at. The one thing I don't feel bad about one iota is that's also what the Chiefs are doing. That's what Spags is doing, what Reed is doing, and what Tobe is doing, and what the players are doing. Just saying, like, oh, yeah, we're good, let's stay here. No one in the NFL is doing that. And one of the things, I mean, I really like that idea of this year's team right now versus last year's team that won the Super Bowl. I think I'm withholding judgment to some extent on the offensive line. What happened there? Did you just honk at someone? Did someone honk at you? Are you okay?
No, that was my 4-year-old son coming in and saying, "Hey, Dad, hi, Lucas."
It sounded like a honk for some reason through the phone. I don't know.
Does your voice sound like a honk, buddy? Okay.
Can you ask him to honk? Can you make a honking noise?
Lucas, can you go honk honk?
I don't want to.
Did you hear that?
No. What he refused, it sounded like.
He said, I don't want to.
Well.
Did you say, I don't want to? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're so silly.
At the very least.
You want to go find mommy?
No. Yeah. Go ahead. Dad of the year.
Mama.
You don't want mom? Well, that's a first.
Yeah. Well, if you honk.
Oh, no, you're absolutely fine.
If you just honk.
Yeah. You can't honk for Mr. Josh? Oh, he said hi, Dad, and it sounded like a honk.
That's fine. The very least, we got you to say honk honk on the radio, which is pretty funny. So we'll have that forever.
But anyway, you were saying before you were honked at.
Yes, the idea of this year's team versus last year's team, and also just the immense number of ways that the Chiefs have been successful on both sides of the ball. We might be entering, as we say, feeding a fed horse territory and just talking about this topic over and over again, but it's just so overwhelming. Like, I just don't know. I don't know where you try to pick on the Chiefs on either side of the ball, even if you're super talented. They're not going to be unbeatable, but it seems like it would be super, super hard because the Bills got kind of manhandled, and also their strategy sort of works. Like, that's the watermark at this point.
Absolutely.
Other than the Raiders, I guess.
The Raiders, template was to win a shootout.
Right.
And I don't know if that's really a template, right?
Yeah.
And as Nate Tice pointed out after that game, the Chiefs would have scored way more points without, two or three different drives. Stupid penalties setting them back to like third and 20 situations, which even for Mahomes, you can only count on like three of those a game, right?
Right.
Well, maybe four or five.
Right.
But not like seven or eight. And so that's not really a template. And really, the neither game has been close. And honestly, the Chiefs, outside of a loss to the Raiders, they've only had a close game against the Chargers.
Yeah.
And that's, pretty much every other game, it has had moments. They haven't been complete blowouts, but the Chiefs have controlled them throughout. And there's really nothing they're bad at other than maybe run defense, which is better than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
And also is something that they're not terrible at consistently.
Mm-hmm.
They might be bad at it for a while, but they make just enough stops to where it's not something you can consistently beat them with. And so really, I don't know what I would tell someone, what's the template for beating the Chiefs. I think the template is either come in like Oakland did with a fantastic game plan on both sides of the ball. They did a good job on both sides of the ball, more so on their offense.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a good job on defense with a few specific things. But even then, that was closer than it should have been, and we're talking a few. There were some brutal drops that game.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of things that kind of ended up favoring them and helped them win it. I don't know what else the template would be other than be really, 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 really good.
Right,
Which is a super boring template.
A couple of things you've written about in the newsletter. We don't have a ton of time left here, but you've written about Tyreek Hill maybe being the best. You can make your big declarative statement on Tyreek Hill, but you've looked at Tyreek Hill as a deep threat, talked about that with him being that guy again against the Jets. Not that he ever stopped being that guy, but he had those moments against the Jets, and you've written about Patrick Mahomes on third down. Give me a little quick statement on Tyreek Hill, and then let's talk about Patrick Mahomes on third down again.
So with Tyreek Hill, CBS aired a really confusing stat that talked about touchdowns of 40-plus yards.
Mm-hmm.
And basically there's Randy Moss and Tyreek Hill, and then there's everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And considering that Tyreek Hill is in year five of his career, that's impressive. Now, it's worth noting that they included, from what I can tell, now that I've looked at it, kickoffs and that sort of thing.
Right.
But when you really go back and look at Hill's number of 40-plus yard touchdowns, it's astonishing how many he has.
Yeah.
And that, even once you take away kickoffs and anything else, or there's one or two run plays in there, you're still at like 19, I think, or 18.
Mm-hmm.
It's a freakishly high number. And when you really look at the way he bends defenses and the way defenses have to play them, and if they don't, Mahomes will audible and he'll say, look, they're playing single high. That's insane.
Right.
And he audibled right to it on third and five and said, I'm just going to throw it up for you, man.
Yep.
And it wasn't just they were playing single high. Most often when teams are playing single high or cover three or something, and there's only one safety, at least, you know, ostensibly one safety trying to patrol the deep third of the field, you usually have it in, like, cover three, where, you know, one of the cornerbacks is responsible to bail out deep, right? Mm-hmm. But you also usually have the safety shaded to his side of the field. This time he wasn't. It's like, well, there's two receivers on the other side of the field. That's more dangerous. And you know Mahomes looked at that and thought, these guys are in, what are they doing? Okay, I guess I'll just throw it up to Tyreek Hill and he'll score a touch. Oh, yep, that's exactly what happened. And he really does bend defenses and force defenses to play them in a certain way, in a way that I don't think people have seen necessarily since Moss. And that's incredibly impressive. And you don't have to believe me. Watch the way Bill Belichick plays the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Now, he's terrified of Tyreek Hill. He's also terrified of Travis Kelce. That's another whole other conversation to have. If you don't think Travis Kelce is an elite tight end and is one of the best to ever play the game, watch how frightened Bill Belichick is of him.
Yeah.
And Hill is in that same stratosphere. The Patriots never leave anyone one-on-one with Hill. They just don't. And it's interesting, the phase that we're getting to watch right now. I'm going to keep kind of hammering people on this over and over, because I feel like, and it also got cut short because of injuries and stuff, I feel like when Jamaal Charles was at his peak, I don't think people necessarily appreciated what they were watching. I really believe he was one of the greatest runners to ever play.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want people to realize what you're watching right now, especially because the team is so much more successful. This is remember when stuff. This is stuff you're going to tell your grandkids about. Like, you are going to be able to say, it's Tyreek Hill. Yeah, I saw him live a bunch of times. Travis Kelce, I stood 5 feet from him. You know, Patrick Mahomes, of course. Yeah, I watched him. One day, I will tell my grandkids, I was there the day Mahomes did the no-look pass against the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
Like, these are things that are going to be legendary, and I hope people appreciate it.
I hope people appreciate the fact that you're so committed to your two coexisting bits of on every time, Zara, you make an Old Testament reference on every episode of Almost Entirely Sports that you're on, you mentioned Jamaal Charles. It's your sort of greatness. It's a Jamaal Charles that sort of greatness here, and I hope your run lasts longer, to be honest. I hope this is a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, you know, here's hoping. But you know, you got to mention Jamaal Charles. But no, it's with Tyreek.
But I think you're right, and I think you're right, and I think that perspective is very, very good here because, excuse me, this came up on the CBS broadcast. I felt bad for not acknowledging what you actually were saying there. This came up on the CBS broadcast during the Jets game where somebody I think it was Harlan that said. That, you know, talking about Travis Kelce, saying sometimes franchises just get lucky enough to have a generational player, and then some franchises get lucky enough to have multiples of them at the same time, and that's Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, and it's also Tyreek Hill, and it's they all exist at once in a way that elevates everybody, and it's just an absolute blast.
It absolutely is. I mean, you know, look, Chris Jones is great, and if he keeps going, he could make the Hall of Fame one day. Kelce has a chance to be considered the greatest tight end of all time. The only thing that's going to be is longevity.
Yep.
That's it. If he plays, let's say, four fewer years than Tony Gonzalez, that's it, four fewer, because Tony Gonzalez played for a really long time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
If he just plays four fewer years, I think he locks up that argument, because he will put every record so far out of reach that anyone who wants to talk about, well, Gronk at his peak, you're going to have to deal with, yeah, but, you know, Kelce had nine consecutive seasons of 1,000 yards, and no one else had even four.
Right.
You know, or like with Tyreek Hill, you know, considering the rate he's going at, he's 26. You're going to be able to say, you know, Tyreek Hill had 45 touchdowns or 50 touchdowns of 40-plus yards, and no one else even has, you know, whatever amount. It's going to be these absurd numbers, and that's what you have a chance to see, is like historical generational greatness.
And again, it's all of those historical generational elements all playing into one bigger piece. It's wonderful. Give me one minute on the Mahomes on third down piece. At the very least, there's a lot of numbers happening in there. Sell that for the Chief of the North newsletter, which people can check out, by the way. I didn't give a proper plug for the URL. It's been a minute. I believe it's still bit.ly/SethHatesMoney or mnchiefsfan.substack.com, where you can check out the newsletter. You can get it for $12 a year, and you can get that rate forever. That's $1 a month if you go there, check out the Chiefs North newsletter. Tell me about the Mahomes on third down article.
Basically, I wrote it, and it kind of shows three different things. The first is that Mahomes is still, in his third year, defying all the numbers and still dominating third down far above every other quarterback, which is something that statistically is not supposed to be sustainable. Well, now, you know, halfway into his third year, still doing it. So that was the first part, was showing the numbers. The second part was talking about the MVP race. It's right now, you know, you might hear Rodgers, Tom Brady, Russ Wilson, and Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Those are the four names you're probably going to hear. Basically, Russ Wilson is kind of the front runner right now, and I get why. He's been bad on third downs. Mm. And when you compare their numbers, it's so one-sided that, I mean, like, Josh Allen has been way better on third down than Russ Wilson.
Woo!
It's so one, yeah, hey, Russ Wilson's been genuinely bad on third downs. Whether you go by yards per attempt, adjusted yards per attempt, EPA per play, he's completing 52% of his passes on third down. It's bad.
Take that, nerds.
And yeah, and it's something that should be taken into account when you're talking about the most valuable player to a team. But Mahomes is so much better. So the next two best quarterbacks on third down are Rodgers and Brady. And Brady is also closer to Josh Allen than he is to Patrick Mahomes on third down.
Crazy.
The only one who's even within spitting distance is Aaron Rodgers. And he's only within spitting distance because the numbers are so comical with everyone else. Mahomes still well outpaces him. And so I wrote about those two aspects of it. And then I also showed some of the plays from the Jets game to demonstrate why. It's his skill set. He can do everything. He can read the defense really well pre-snap and find the open guy. He can buy time. He can put balls. Like, there was a 3rd-and-14 conversion to Mecole Hardman that people kind of ignored. But if he didn't put unbelievable velocity on a ball that was from the opposite hash,
yeah,
that ball isn't completed, and most guys can't do that. So I show them, you know, so it's kind of a combination of everything, a little commentary, some numbers, and some film, and hopefully people will enjoy it. That one's unlocked for anyone to read.
Oh, and okay, very good. So you do not have to be subscribed. If you're the person that's listened to every Seth segment for the last 2 years or whatever, and you're still not sold on him in his written form, you can go prove it to yourself if you'd like. mnchiefsfan.substack.com. All the links are in his Twitter bio as well, at RealMNChiefsFan. Seth, this was wonderful to have our Tuesdays back. Really, I think probably the biggest thing that happened on this Tuesday, the thing that everyone will be talking about for a very long time, us returning to the airwaves for this segment. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. And if there's one thing I know, it's that everyone listening to this right now is in a terrific mood.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
United Arab, what is that?
What was that word?
United. Wow.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You called it an Arab for
I
first.
Know, I
and
did.
And then you called it a United.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Seth Kaiser of The Athletic and the Chief in the North newsletter, both things you can check out through his Twitter account, at RealMNChiefsFan, for joining us on tonight's show. As he does every Tuesday that we have shows, it's good to have Tuesday shows back, even as this has been a weird Tuesday, just sort of news-wise. We're not talking about election results tonight, just not going to try to thread that needle. You can check out 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, ESPN Kansas City. We'll have coverage all the way through midnight. And we also have a show tomorrow, 3 hours again, 8 to 11. And I'm already looking forward to that show as well, because this one was a lot of fun today with a lot of great guests. One thing that Seth mentioned there that we dug into a little bit on Times Ours with Seth and myself and Nate Taylor, the 21-1 number for Patrick Mahomes, and I mentioned it, I think Harold mentioned it, we've mentioned it some, but like, the idea that, hey, here's some things that Russell Wilson's been bad at this year. Those things simply don't exist for Patrick Mahomes. The way that he is playing the quarterback position doesn't make sense. Not that it's illogical or anything, but, like, it's without precedent. And that type of performance from him this year, it's just different than it's been in years past. Last year he was remarkably accurate. He didn't turn the ball over last year either. But there's just an extra level of absolute absurdity that comes with realizing that this guy is deadly accurate, deadly precise, does not put the ball in harm's way, and is also among the most aggressive passers in football. I mean, you get to like CPOE, completion percentage over expected, and stuff like that. Some stats don't like Mahomes as much. There was a thread on Twitter today that I thought was really interesting about Mahomes like basically pump faking a guy open in a way that actually hurt his CPOE, because by the time the ball was on its way, it should have been completed. But some stuff that Mahomes did before throwing the ball actually made it a more completable pass. So all of that has just a thousand different, you know, factors playing into it. I hope that we can, sort of like Seth ended up alluding to in terms of appreciating what you're seeing, I hope we appreciate the fact that we're watching Patrick Mahomes play football differently than I think anyone else we've seen do it ever. Because it's aggressive, and it's got these big swings, and it's downfield, and that's where his eyes look first, and he can't also, you know, run for some first downs and everything. It's all of that, and it's not putting the ball in harm's way in any meaningful way. It's taking traditionally risky throws, rolling as a right-handed quarterback to his left and throwing back right again, or rolling right and throwing left for that matter, dropping back and fading out of the pocket and throwing off his back foot. All of these things that have traditionally meant risk, turnovers, lower completion percentage, inaccurate, those things he's doing all of those. While he's also, again, incredibly precise, the completion percentage is all there, high numbers of touchdowns, almost no turnovers, all of these things that would typically correlate to, you know, winning games however they want, those would all typically correlate to a quarterback who takes the dink and dunks and looks for the checkdowns and at least sort of starts with his eyes near the line of scrimmage and then looks downfield if stuff opens up. Quarterbacks who will happily take the thing out of the flat, will happily throw the quick slant, and even if you have maybe a couple open options, and Trent Green mentioned this during one play against the Jets, I can't remember which one it was, I think it was one of the touchdowns, it was definitely a deep shot, he said, well, he could have thrown the ball to three guys there, and he went to the deep one. Typically, all of these things that Mahomes is able to show you in terms of how much he's protecting the football, that typically correlates to a quarterback who will look to the middle of the field and will just sort of throw it to Travis Kelce 7 yards at a time. Not that there's anything wrong with that, who will just throw it to Kelce seven yards at a time and never pushes it downfield. If an intermediate option and a deep option are both open, they'll take the intermediate option. Mahomes is looking downfield with all of the accuracies of someone who thinks like Kirk Cousins, with the talent of, you know, Aaron Rodgers and whatever, Brett Favre, if you want. With such an unbelievable understanding of the game in a way that I, fittingly enough, don't fully understand, that he's able to think aggressively without actually putting the ball in harm's way. And I don't think we can talk about that element of Patrick Mahomes enough. Last thing for us here on tonight's show, you've maybe had to hear them exclusively in the podcast feed for a few weeks because we haven't had as many shows, but Beards McFly has once again brought us sad fans on Reddit. It's sad Jets fans on Reddit. I have not heard it yet. He said that they're pretty good at being self-effacing and knowing that they are in fact Jets fans. So what better way to end this night than with a little bit of sad fans on Reddit?
And now, a list of things that New York Jets fans said on Reddit. Step 1, get out there. Step 2, play. Step 3, ? Step 4, move to 1-7. Step 5, realize that step 4 did not happen. Step 6, move to 0-8. I think if they lose this one, you can kiss the playoffs goodbye. Wait, you can throw to Bell too? Who knew? Weren't the Chiefs at their 10-yard line about 3 seconds ago? How bad is it, guys? LMFAO, holy sh**, we suck. And we haven't even played offense yet. Comment. Bell's final act to the Jets was helping them tank. Reply, he truly is the Jesus Christ of the Jets. Well, now I'm starting to doubt the Jets. Poor Sam. The only quarterback in the NFL to have an almost entirely metaphorical offensive line. I mean, this kinda looks like an offense. In fairness, we're just not a good team generally. Adam Gase took over play calling, didn't he? Oh no, the Jets used up the whole playbook! Fake punts against the Jets? Oh, suck it. I'm at the urgent care. Turns out, it's a kidney stone. Still better than watching this team. We lost to a punter.
Yes.
Who cares about a franchise quarterback when we have a franchise kicker? We better not f***ing score. We're a force to be reckoned with once we've been mathematically eliminated, parentheses, pretty much, from the playoffs. I thought on third and long the rules say you have to throw a screen for 1 yard again. Darnold Hit As He Throws is my least favorite song. Down 12 points, you say? Another field goal, the Jets say. The bad news, Berrios. The Jets really are the worst coach and least talented team in the NFL. 4 yard out routes and Sam Darnold. Name a better combo. Special teams, y'all. That's all we got. We would be 0-8 with Mahomes at quarterback.
That's not true.
Sam is a pinata. I think that was a kamikaze move. Darnold was just like, kill me. We were only down 5 at one point. In air quotes, good news, the Pats are looking competent against the Bills. I don't think we'll f*** up the tank against them. I bet every time they call Gore's number on first down, down 2 scores, Gore's like, okay, but why, though? 5 touchdowns and 400 yards passing would probably take us 6 games to achieve. LOL, seeing Mahomes carry Hill like that is the meme with Squidward watching SpongeBob and Patrick play outside.
It is!
At some point, the spread this season will be Jets plus 34, and the Jets won't cover it. Darnold did his very best to get injured, but joke's on him. Gase won't take him out as long as his arm is still attached. If you don't like this, you don't like New Jersey football. Muscle flexing emoji. We are so good at being terrible. This pleases the tank. New England is so ass, we could potentially beat them.
Well,
what the f*** does Gase do at halftime? It sure as hell isn't make adjustments.
That's true.
I learned my lesson. I need more alcohol to watch these games and feel less. For once, the Jets lived up to expectations. Well, my liquor store is starting to ask questions. At this point, I miss Rex Ryan.
Oof.
That's how defeated I am as a Jets fan. And now, the runners-up, of which there are 3, of things that Jets fans said on Reddit. Sometimes I wonder if the Jets sucking is my punishment for being a sh** person. Trevor Lawrence is going to look like 2020 Axl Rose after 16 games behind this offensive line. I hope Berrios gets a sudden case of diarrhea and has to come out. He is single-handedly ruining the offense. He's so bad. What do they see in this guy? He's terrabad. And now, the winner of things that New York Jets fans said on Reddit. Our kickers are really good. I think we're playing the wrong football.
I won't stand for this Braxton Berrios slander. He looked like a competent football player with also lots of bad plays, but he's a Jet. He's a Jet. What else did you expect? Well, I hope that that is a good reprieve right now. Sad fans on Reddit, New York Jets edition. It will be the end of tonight's Almost Entirely Sports. Thanks, of course, to Beards for making that masterpiece every week. Thanks to Rudy Salazar for getting us through another show. We'll be back again tomorrow, 3 hours, 8 to 11 tomorrow night as well. Thanks to Harold Koontz of Fox 4. Thanks to Tamara Day of HGTV. Thanks to David Leske of Baseball Prospectus and Royals Review. And thanks to Seth Kaiser of the Chief of North Newsletter and The Athletic. And thanks to you, dear listener. We will talk to you again tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Until then, hold on and bye, Mom.